The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by the Elite Experience, Elite Shotguns, and is fueled by Fiocchi.
Paul?
Welcome to the Dead Pair Podcast, coming in hot with everything you want to hear about sporting clays.
Guy Fieri.
How are you, gentlemen? Thanks for having me.
Anthony Matarese Jr., how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well.
Welcome back, David Radulovich.
That's a net positive.
Brad Kidd.
Corey Cruz. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Now I feel awkward.
With your hosts, Jason Rambo.
One more Red Bull for you.
And Sean Alley.
Woo, yeah!
Christmas.
Let's do it.
Often imitated but never duplicated. It's the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair.
And now, it's showtime.
Well, hello there, my large mammal friend.
Jason, what's going on with you, buddy?
Oh, dude, just another day in paradise or somebody's nightmare or something. I don't know, one of those things.
Yeah, we're finally starting to see little signs of spring up here. So, I mean, I'm sure you're just, you know, all nice and warm and cozy down there, watching palm trees and beach sand.
Yeah, but I think the high today is only going to be like 83, so it's terrible.
Can you hear that? It's the smallest violin playing the saddest song you've ever heard.
Well, hey, I know something that'll drown your sorrows, Sean Alley. This is a big announcement for everybody. Welcome aboard to Conic Distilleries.
Yes, absolutely.
This is pretty exciting. You know, we brought it up on the episode we did with Blaze Whitehead. He talked about being sponsored by Taconic. They sent us a couple bottles to try. We loved it. Got to spend some time with Paul down at the Caribbean Cup. What a nice gentleman.
Absolutely.
And his products are just phenomenal, you know. So if you're old enough to indulge in such, we've tried some of the different flavors he has, and we're talking award-winning bourbon here, folks. I mean, this stuff is good.
He's got some really unique stuff, and if you guys want to check it out, just visit his website, www.spirits.taconicdistillery.com, and that's T-A-C-O-N-I-C, taconicdistillery.com.
Yep, for sure. Love the slogan we came up with. When the tournament is over, it's time for one more shot with Taconic Distillery.
Yeah, I like that.
I think it's awesome. We're not going to make this episode about bourbon, but let's face it, we're old enough to do so, and after the guns are put away, there's no better way to either celebrate or drown your sorrows, right, Sean?
One or the other.
Hey, listen, we need some questions for the coaches, folks. We've been hounding everybody about getting them in. We're getting a ton of them in, but we've got a lot more coaches than we have questions. So get those sent in to us. We're going to get your questions answered.
Yeah, and also don't forget about Dr. Grace. Love to hear your questions about hearing protection and whatever items come to mind to ask her. She's more than happy to try to help everybody out with their hearing questions.
Absolutely. Our website, TheDeadPair.com. If you are a club or a coach or know a club or know a coach, get on there, get listed. We're going to start doing some highlights of these clubs and these coaches as we move forward. So that database is building slowly but surely. If you are a new shooter, you need to check that out. I mean, this is why we did this. We're creating an easy button for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, not to go off on another tangent, but that's why we're here. Today, we're going to talk about some eye dominance issues, Jason, and you, for one, are a person that has experienced all this firsthand.
Yes, unfortunately, yes. Yes.
Unfortunately, and I've watched you go through it for the last several years. But you found some saving grace, a solution, so to speak, that's helped you out quite a bit, and obviously your shooting has improved because of it, and that's what we're going to be talking about on this podcast today.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know enough about the eyes to be dangerous. Figuratively, but no, it was so weird. Sean, I think you saw it firsthand. You know, at Nationals, I'd step into the cage and I'd go dead pair, and then the wheels fall off. And it's like, you know, I don't understand. I'm seeing everything I saw the last two pairs. What's going on? You know, mm-hmm. And Sean, you saw the frustration that I dealt with.
Absolutely.
And there was definitely something going on there. You know, my coach, Mr. Chad Roberts himself, he knew of it. Thought he could correct it with training. And then it was time to, we had to reach out a little bit, you know. Sean, you saw it yourself. It was getting to the point where Chad would come in town, he'd hit me over the head with a shovel, get me back right again, and everything was great. in the driveway. Everything was fantastic. Out at the courses, everything was fantastic. It'd come tournament time, and I'd fall apart. Mm-hmm. And there was something going on there as far as pressure goes. Anybody with diabetes knows what I'm talking about. I don't have diabetes, but anybody with a blood sugar problem, anything like that, as anxiety and pressure starts coming on, it can greatly affect the eyes. And that's exactly what was happening in the tournament. And we found the problem, and we found the solution. But hey, listen, let's not take my word for it. Let's get two people on here that know way more about this than me and you, Sean, and ask them the questions.
Sounds good, buddy.
The Dead Pair.
All right, joining us on the phone right now, a man that needs no introductions, Mr. Ben Hustwaite. Ben, how you doing this evening?
Hey, good guys. How are you?
Good, great.
How's the family, Ben?
Yeah, family's good. I'm looking forward to doing a non-controversial podcast.
Gotcha. On the phone also, we have John. Is it Gangemi, or how do you pronounce that, John?
Gangemi.
Gangemi, okay. And John, explain to everybody why you're here.
I'm here because I'm the actual U.S. distributor for the Eye Dominance Rail, which was developed by Ben and Steve May out of Europe. And I'm actually a user. And when I was using it here in the U.S., the distributor that was here didn't have product anymore. I actually had a friend of mine in England buy me a couple more and ship them to me here in the States for my other guns. And I love the product so much that that's when I got a hold of Steve and said, look, if you need a U.S. distributor, I'm in.
Cool. Very cool. How's
Well, before you dive into all the questions, Sean, I want to preface this with Ben a little bit. Ben, you know, I was working with Chad, and, you know, Chad recognized the problem, and, you know, through training, and he would come in town, hit me in the head with a shovel, get me back straight again. Everything's going great. I get into a tournament, and I had this problem. Explain to everyone how you found the problem with me at a tournament.
There's not many in this sport that, you know, I like looking at pictures and seeing other people and seeing if I can see things that are going on, even if people are not my student. You know, I see other instructors post video clips of them teaching. I think, oh my God, how can you dare post that? There's just so much going wrong that you're just letting slip. And then obviously we were talking one day and you were like, you're having a trouble. And I said, right, just send me a couple of video clips or some photos of you shooting. And I said to you one day, look, your gun's pointing one way and the peak of your cap's pointing the other. What's going on? And you were like, no. What do you mean? we had an in-depth conversation. That's when I said, look, there's only one way your head's turning that way is because your left eye wants to get involved.
Yeah.
And even at that point, I mean, one thing I'll get into later on, I never tried to sell you a rail. I never even brought it up. You know, I was just working you through that this is a problem and close your left eye and mount for me again. And all of a sudden the peak of your cap was looking where the barrel was. And that was sort of the beginning of our conversation to you having a dominance issue where perhaps it had been misdiagnosed or misplaced before.
Well, Sean experienced it firsthand shooting because he shoots with me a lot. And I would step into a cage and dead pair. And then came the problems. Explain to everyone how the dominance doesn't switch, but the bad eye tries to take over as you try to focus harder or try harder. Explain how that works.
I mean, I'm only talking from experience. I'm no eye professional, and you know, I don't claim to be. I'm just talking from experience that, you know, if I take my father for instance, my dad is 100% right eye dominant. He's right handed. His right eye is dominant. And he mounts a gun in his left eye dominant.
Now, was that something that came up like out of a certain situation, Ben? Because I know we've talked about it before. Can you give the listeners just a little bit of background on it?
Yeah, so my father had cataracts in his eyes. And he went in and had the lens replacement surgery. And then he came back and he was like, look, I can't hit anything. And it's the first and only time my father's come to me for help in shooting. Like, he would rather miss than me helping. But, you know, it got to the point where he's like, look, what on earth is going wrong? And we started shooting. I was like, you know, you have to shoot somewhere in the same vicinity of what you're shooting at. You know, you're missing by a different zip code. We're not even, you know, if this was a pigeon, it wouldn't have scared it. It carried on flying. You're so far away.
Wow.
And we sort of got to work from there. And then my dad being my dad, he turned around and said, look, you call yourself the best instructor in the world. You better fix me. And that was really how it began, out of a bet, because I just hate losing to my dad. That I sort of got to work just to really prove him wrong was the case that, okay, I will fix it. And that was how it all began back in whenever it was, 2019, I think.
Gotcha. And then from there, I know you worked with some people. What did you say? It was a race car team or somebody that was an engineer at a race car team?
My father turned around to me and I said, look, I think I've figured out a way of getting around this for you. And I made him a rail out of an old hacksaw blade. I melted it down, manipulated it, and just literally super glued it to the side of his rib using his old bead. And it sort of worked, but he's got a very expensive Krieg off, and it didn't, the go faster stripe on the side didn't look cool, if you know what I mean.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So we sort of went into, right, let's see how this works. Now, my dad's got a manufacturing plant. He's got an engineering company, but it was just a little bit. We work in big things, big steel doors. And this was just a little bit out of our comfort zone. And another client of mine, a guy called Steve May, he came for a lesson and it was the exact same problem. Literally to the letter, it was the same problem. And I said to Steve, look, I know how to fix you, but I just don't have one. He says, what do you mean? And he basically said to me, can you draw? I said, yeah. And I drew it for him. And he was like, right, leave it with me. You know, turns out that Steve's a designer for, you know, Honda race team. And, you know, he designs ridiculous things to try and get another 5 horsepower out of a car. And he came back with phase one. And I was like, okay, we're onto something. That's definitely not the finished product, but we're onto something. And that's where we went 50-50 into the business together.
Nice.
And that was how it began. We started off when we finally made which I'll go through with you guys later on. When we finally made the finished product, we were like, right, let's make 50 of them and see if they sell. The guy that was going to make them for us, so the aluminum ones are made in the UK currently, and the plastic ones are made in Germany at another client of mine. And the aluminum ones, the guy wanted to make 300 of them. He wouldn't make anything less than 300. And I was like, no, forget it. I'm not going to put that kind of capital into this because they are expensive to buy. I'm not going to put that into it. And my dad basically sort of said, well, I'll do it because I want one. And we'll work out how to sell the 300. And we just touched on the 10,000th one been sold.
Wow.
Wow.
Pretty incredible. So, all right. So let's back up a little bit, Ben, because as a coach, I'm sure you probably run into this problem frequently, or at least more frequently than most. And obviously you've got enough experience to identify when somebody like Jason is struggling with this issue, and you probably can pick up on it and you know what it is. How common is it for a lot of shooters to have an eye dominance problem and not be aware that they have it?
I think it's 50-50 both ways, where a lot of people are also misdiagnosed.
Okay.
I don't just think it's people not diagnosed. A lot of people are diagnosed with eye dominance issues that's also not there.
Okay.
You know, I think it's as bad as it gets in both scenarios. And unfortunately, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Now, if you say the average length of a lesson in the UK is between 90 minutes and 2 hours, and in those 90 minutes or 2 hours, you're probably only going to fire between 100 and 200 shots, you know, because you're learning, not shooting. That's one thing that's very different with my lessons. It's quantity, you know, it's quality over quantity. You might not get to that point of tiredness where the lazy eye dominance can come in. But then you put yourself in a tournament situation where you're exerting more mental energy and your eyes are getting more and more tired, that around station 7, through tiredness, nicotine, sugar levels, your now dominance has switched and you can't understand why you've had a terrible back end of the course. But that might never get diagnosed in a lesson because you don't get to the same point that you do in a competition, if that makes sense.
Okay, I understand that. So,
hold on a second, Sean. So, Ben, that was one of the discussions that we had, is I was diagnosed as R2L2, but you were saying there's a massive difference between standing in a room and being diagnosed something with your eyes and then putting a shotgun to your face.
The problem with a lot of guys around the world at the minute, they keep coming up with this R2L2, and the last time I heard that was it was a figure on Star Wars. That's about as useful as that information is. You know, you've got shooting coaches diagnosing in detail eye dominance, and that's just a crime scene that, you know, shouldn't happen.
Gotcha.
Well, just recently added to the show, Mr. Chad Roberts is with us. So, Chad, let's just real quick to catch you up. We were talking about how you recognized the problem and you would come in town and work with me and everything would be fine. And then I'd get deep into a tournament and things were going awry and we couldn't figure out why. Talk about that for a second, what you saw and why we reached out to Ben.
You know, for me as a coach, and I'm sure Ben sees it too, we see eye dominance issues across the board. Probably 65% of my students are left eye dominant, right-handed. You know, it's not, most of them are older gentlemen or ladies that have been shooting for a long time. So I have to work with what I have. They don't want to switch shoulders, nor all the time does that work. So, you know, the eye grab thing happens, and it's a situation where, you know, I knew it was a problem, but I didn't think it was a problem until it was going to be a problem, and or until it was a problem. So first and foremost, I wanted to get you guys, or you, up to speed with your shooting and the techniques and understanding everything we do with a shotgun. And as I dove into it more with you, I started seeing more and more of a problem, which I actually talked to Ben about. I've spoke with a couple other coaches too, but just to see how they dealt with it. And, you know, you get a lot of different information out there. And, you know, I'm not saying it's snake oil salesmen's out there, but, you know, it seems like, you know, not everybody's got it figured out. It is a very complex situation. So Ben seems to have a pretty good handle on it, doesn't overthink it. And so I asked him some questions and he was giving me some tidbits that I was helping you with. And, you know, and I think you had been talking with him on the side, and I think that all the rainbows connected at the end, and we ended up working together as a team to get you figured out.
Gotcha. So Ben, let me go into this, because I'm trying to identify, at least for our listeners. So your eye rail, if a person is right-handed, they shoot right-handed and they're left eye dominant, your eye rail can fix that problem?
That was never what it was designed for.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of people get the misconception of what it's about. Now, what I found the most, some people simply cannot put a patch on their lenses. They get nauseous. They get dizzy. They don't know where the floor is when they're walking. So, and my dad was one of those people. You put a patch on his lens and he was just fighting it nonstop.
Okay.
Now, the problem when it comes to closing an eye, the barrel moves. You think, I'd say to Dad, look, I asked you to shoot pull away. And he'd be like, I am pointing at it. And I'm like, dude, you're miles behind it on a left to right crosser. Because when he closes that eye, bang, the barrel is now no longer where it was. It's now jumped to the non-dominant eye. And it's obviously pulled the barrel across, which is really difficult to do.
Okay.
So what I designed the rail for was that even though his left eye dominant, only his right eye can see the bead.
Okay.
So when he closes the eye to lose the ghost barrel, the bead is still where he thought it was.
Okay.
So if he thinks he's pointing at it, the red bead is pointing at it, then he shuts this eye and the ghost barrel moves and the red dot is still exactly where he thought it was. That was its whole design and purpose, was to eradicate barrel jump.
Okay. All right.
And we put a pre-order to market. We had an open day. We released it at Kibwe Shooting Ground. And we had 212 people come and collect their rail on that day.
Wow.
And as they were out shooting it, the reports just started to come in. I can keep two eyes open, which was never its design. And what we found was, if your dominance is medium to mild, the rail was enough to straighten you up, where your right eye would see enough of the red bead where the left eye would give up the fight.
Okay.
Now, if you are extremely left eye dominant, it's still not going to allow you to shoot two eyes open.
Okay. All right.
But if you do shut that off eye, the barrel will be exactly where you think it is.
Got it.
So its sole purpose, it sort of overachieved anything we thought it would do.
Wow. So in Jason's case, he's not necessarily left eye dominant. It's just under certain situations, his left eye is trying to take over.
And his head just turns in, trying to get the left eye down the rib. And that's when he looks like he's Woody Woodpecker with his neck going all over the place.
Okay. Now, is that kind of a common issue with shooters?
Yeah, that's something I see a lot, especially halfway through a testing course when the tiredness kicks in.
Okay.
And a lot of shooters, as we've spoke about before, nutrition is not at the forefront of their, you know, they don't rehydrate. They don't put the salts back in. They smoke on the way around. They have a can of Red Bull in the morning and they, oh, you know, my eye dominance changed. Well, yes, it did.
Gotcha. Now, Chad, you kind of recognized there was a problem. And before Jason got the eye rail, you were doing some exercises with him to try to help him fight the dominance. Can you just touch on that a little bit?
Well, some of it was, you know, let's get the gun away from the barrel a little, or the eye away from the barrel a little bit, just because he seemed to be really good in a FITAS situation where he could, you know, when he's in a low gun position and shooting the targets almost like a snapshot, he was very good. Matter of fact, he won a state title doing that. And, you know, and then I think, you know, just messing around with the comb, getting his eye too high off the gun, you know, we went backwards a little bit, you know, and for me, it was just, you know, how I've always worked it is I've actually put some of my students on a pattern board with both eyes open, one eye closed, have them shoot it and look at the barrel and see where they're shooting the gun. And they actually are pretty shocked at where their pattern ends up on the board, and it's all over the place. And, you know, I've had some of my students that don't want to use, you know, any type of aid to help them learn what barrel to look at. Cause we all see two barrels, every one of us, you know, that's on this podcast and anywhere out there in shooter land, we all see two barrels. It's just that more dominant type shooter, you know, the eyes that there are, you know, it's more prevalent, but you know, there are certain shots that I see both barrels and I have to look over the top of the gun.
You're going to see two barrels because you've got two eyes.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, you know, and so we started closing them down a little bit on certain shots, squinting. We tried some of the Band-Aids out there. I didn't like taping them because then you lose your peripheral vision. And your eye just tries to strain around the occlusion that you're putting out there if it's trying to look out that side. So I was just trying to get them to understand what barrel to actually look at. And you know, for the most part, because he wasn't losing tournaments necessarily because of his eyes at the beginning, it was a lot of his technique. You know, he shoots at home, you know, in Ohio, he was shooting in, you know, woods where there was very little, you know, it was almost like window shots. And when you're throwing a gun up there and snapping them off, you don't see the barrel like you would if you're dragging one across the, you know, a target across the sky, like when I took him out here to California. And, you know, I think that it worked and we got kind of there and he started understanding the, you know, the ins and outs of all the techniques and how they work and when to apply them. And then that was just the one thing that's been kind of where we've been working at, like, okay, now it's time to address it. Cause now that stuff that he's missing is going to really hinder his score long term. So, and if he's going to compete where he's at, we need him to step up his game.
Gotcha.
Well, and let me jump in real quick on that one. So with this eye rail, and it takes time, people, don't think you're going to just put it on and go out and shoot lights out the next day, even though I did well with it the same day I put it on. It takes some time with it, but now I'm starting to see what I was supposed to be seeing through all Chad's training. You know, I mean, the picture that I'm seeing now, you know, pulling away from a target, leading a target, coming from behind, it all looks the way it's supposed to. And that's the one thing I've noticed about it. Ben, have you had any comments from anybody that's put the I-rail on that said they're not lifting their head at the shot anymore? I noticed I'm not doing that either. It's almost like it's keeping me planted.
Yeah, and this is like people accredited me and the I-rail and, oh yeah, it's so good, it fixes this. And I was like, well, that was never in the plan. I'm not going to admit to something like that was it was an accidental fix. People are saying, you know, and the second, you know, we got to four prototypes before we got to where we're at now. So there was lots of development where we got it wrong, you know, which I'll talk to you about when we get onto the development stage. But yeah, so people are saying, you know, because of the hood on the top, if you pick your head up, the beads now occluded again. So it does engage the head to keep the head down. And I was, you know, one thing I was big on that we didn't create another tube sight. You know, I don't want the likes of those straws with a light at the end, because to see the red thing, you got to look in it. Well, when I'm looking in it, I'm not looking past it to where I'm shooting.
Makes
sense. Which was why we went for the, well, originally it was just an L shape. It had no hood on it.
Okay. So Jason, circling back, I watched you for years. You had some flinching problems that would come and go, number one. And then number two, I would watch you, like you just said, you'd run a couple pairs and drop a pair, or you'd drop a pair and run a couple pairs, was off and on. I mean, obviously this was frustrating for you. Obviously that you just weren't really sure. You'd look at me, you'd turn around and look at me like, how did I just miss that 20-yard crosser that was going slow as dirt? And obviously that was frustrating. So can you talk a little bit about, once you put the I-rail on, how did you feel when you were actually shooting and moving the gun after that was on the gun?
Well, at first, like any kind of a practice or anything, it wasn't necessarily that big of a deal. But where I noticed it is late in my pairs, or like Ben alluded to, is, you know, late in the round, when the stress and anxiety came on, that's when I faltered. Well, with that, I don't know how to explain it. It's technically right, but it's basically you feel dialed. I felt more connected to the target. I was seeing what I was supposed to see. You know, I thought I was seeing what I was supposed to see without it, but the problem was I was probably 2 or 3 feet to the right or to the left of the target.
Yeah, but I think you got to miss, that's a misdiagnosis. You were seeing what you were supposed to see. You were just seeing it with the wrong eye.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's why I say I was 2 or 3 feet to the left of the target.
You were still doing what you thought was correct. It was just simply out because the wrong eye was doing the job for you.
Right. And as far as the flinching goes, that was the barrel occluding the target. That was a visual flinch. Well, if I'm looking at things the way I'm supposed to be looking at them with this eye rail, that's obviously going to eliminate that.
Gotcha.
And I haven't had a single flinch since I've put this on. Again, that's not what it was intended for, right, Ben? But it works.
Yeah, look, it's if I wrote down the list of things that people have said, oh my God, your eye rail's fixed this. You know, it wouldn't be called the eye rail. It'd be called the flinch rail, the head lift rail, the two eye rail. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on.
Well, so Ben, the question I have, and I know that most listeners that are probably hearing this, you know, how does a person know they need to start thinking about getting an eye rail? What kind of telltale signs are they going to see?
Well, the problem is you don't know you need one until you've missed one.
Okay.
That's the problem. It's when you sit there and you go, huh. How did that not break?
That's exactly right.
If you're a okay to good shot, you know, if you're in D class and you're not making good moves and you miss the third bird, it might just because you're not good enough to break the third bird. But if you've got yourself to A class, your coach has helped you get there, and you just sit there and say, that bird's going to get 3 feet of lead. The next bird's going to get 3 feet of lead. The next bird's going to get 3 feet to lead and you miss by 3 feet, there's a problem.
That's when you need to ask a question. Okay.
Especially when somebody says, you're miles behind them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a bad enough shot to have missed by the amount you've just told me.
Okay.
I would sit there and think, well, if I gave it 3 feet in front and killed it twice, I've now gave it 3 feet and missed it 3 feet behind. That's a 6-foot shift. And I didn't move 6 foot.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And that's going to be the first telltale sign. Or you can't hit the simple birds. If you've got a 1 meter pull, say Jason walks into a station and he's got a 1 meter pull, he shoots a crosser, gives it a meter, and he's still a meter behind it. He'll think it's a misread and he'll give it 2 meters and just kill it.
Okay.
Now, the problem is if you've got a reverse teal coming at you and you're missing the birds that want no lead, right? Because you're now going to have to shoot 1 meter up the right. Well, you know that's wrong. So if you're missing the simplistic no lead shots, quartering birds, close rabbits, teal, incomers, the birds that want no lead, if they're giving you the most problems, there's probably an issue.
Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful because I know a lot of people are probably scratching their head and thinking that sounds like me, or maybe they're saying this doesn't sound like me. So that's, I'm just trying to dial it in.
Understand, Sean, this is where Chad and I sat down after Nationals. Like Ben said, that target takes 3 feet lead, bam, killed it. That target takes 3 feet lead, bam, killed it. And then the miss comes. And you saw it, Sean, you witnessed it. And I had a conversation with Chad. I'm like, something's not right. I'm doing everything, and I'm not saying I'm shooting the picture, but I'm doing every single thing that I did in the first two pairs. I killed 4 birds with these methods, these leads, and I got to the third pair and iced the pair. You know, and this didn't just happen one station. This happened, Sean, you saw it all across 4 courses, every station this happened.
Oh yeah, saw it plenty.
You were like, what is going on? You know,
yeah.
And I mean, I would look at you with this lost look on my face, like I did everything the same. That's when I knew there was a problem, and Chad and I had a conversation, and that's when we brought Ben into the mix. And over the winter in January, Ben said, "I need to see some pictures of you shooting." And like he said, you know, the barrel's pointing at 12 o'clock, and my head's pointing at 3 o'clock. We have a problem, you know.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So, you've got a terrible fitting hat.
I don't wear it sideways, you know. I'm not a hoodlum. So,
all right. Well, so for all the people out there wondering, if a customer buys an iRail, Jason, let's talk a little bit about what you had to do to get it fit to the gun and whatever else is involved with actually getting it mounted and how you go out and go about shooting it.
Well, Ben can speak to this. It comes with 3M double sided tape on it.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem I have is, you know, me, you, and Chad all use Q-Max, and the rib on the collar is knurled, if you will. It's not straight line like some of them are.
Right.
And regardless of my cleaning it really good with alcohol or whatever, it did not want to stick. So a couple of little drops of Gorilla Glue, and it has not moved one bit. But Ben, it's pretty much just line it up with the bead and get it straight on the rail, right?
Yeah, and some people find this is where some people, and especially my father, like to kick the back out a little bit. So it's not actually dead straight. It's just off center. So the red bit is still level in the middle, but my dad basically said it felt like a funnel then was leading him in. Instead of looking down the side of a wall, it just sort of gave him a nice, like, almost like bouncing a basketball off the backboard. It sort of gave his eye a tube to just look down with ease. And that's just some of the things we spoke about earlier with the lady that you wanted me to speak to. That's the sort of thing I would start to sometimes if you match it to the rib and you've got you can actually sort of have the back end too far in and you're blocking the main part of the sight.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, John, let's jump over because I know a lot of people at this point are asking, how much is it? Where do they get it? And do you have plenty of stock in the U.S.?
Well, that's a good – I just told Ben I ordered some more. We go through stock pretty quick, but I'm never out of them for more than a couple of days tops. Steve gets them right out to me, and I replenish quick, and I've got a guy that manages my website for me. So, you know, when I'm out, I shut it off so they can't even, you know, buy something that's not there. But the price in the States is it's $129 for the metal ones and it's $79 for the plastic ones.
Okay.
Plus tax and shipping. And we ship everywhere in the United States. I have, because of my other businesses, I have distribution everywhere in the U.S. So for me, it's no problem. It's all right. USPS out the door.
And give us the website one more time where they can go and buy one.
It's idominancerail.com.
idominancerail.com. Okay.
We'll have a link in the show description to that too. So
good deal. Good deal.
Website's actually got Ben on there and the Steve telling you how to put it on the gun. It's got the, you know, the actual videos that show how to do it all, explain it. And it's been phenomenal. And like I say, I use one, I'm hooked on it. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Maybe I'll just have to get one and play around with it just to try it out. I don't think I have any die dominance problems, but, I don't know. Maybe it'd be just funny just to test it out. Chad, any last thoughts or anything as far as, how Jason's been coming along with using this tool?
Yeah, I did my job. No, BPSI works, doesn't it? No, you know, one thing I had to question for Ben, and I know the answer, but I just want to throw it out there because I'm sure there's going to be questions on the market, but there are some other models of different stuff out there, like the Easy Hit and some of the other brands that are, they kind of look like an iRail, but they're very short. And did you guys discuss the differences of, you know, somebody that's going to question that because, you know, the Easy Hit's like $34.95 and I don't even know what the other one, that other short one's called, but it really, you know, there is a difference. And can you discuss that, Ben, or would you like to? Besides it works.
One of the big things is the material used. You know, the aluminum one is airplane grade aluminum. It's you know, the reason I made, Steve didn't even want to bring out the plastic version. I've made him bring out the plastic version. So we were available to all budgets. I just didn't want it to be an elitist product where, you know, the guy that can't go and afford the 129 also got something he can, you know, a couple of months of saving and he might be able to grasp one. I didn't want it to be an elitist product. Now, the problem with the tube sight, and one of the biggest things that people really, really, when I say it to them, they just go, huh, yeah. Well, if you've got a 6-inch tube sight, right, and you put that on your 32-inch barrel, you've not got a 32-inch barrel anymore.
What do you mean?
Well, when you look into the tube looks like the green dot is at this end.
Oh.
So you've now took a...
So it changes your sight picture.
It's got to, because you've now took a 32-inch barrel and made it 26.
Gotcha.
It has to. It can't not. If you took your bead off your end of your gun and moved it 6 inches further down, you think that's not going to have an impact?
No, that definitely is going to change all your leads and your hold points and stuff, right? I mean,
that's why the tube sight for me was just a non-starter. I'd have to buy a 38-inch barrel.
Yeah, I don't want to be swinging that around. No, thank you.
No, so I was like, and they're like, yeah, because I can see it from here.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Like, and then I've got to look into the tube.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, as far as a price point, I mean, you can get a cheaper one for, what do you say, $79, and the aluminum one's $129, John?
Correct.
So, I mean, let's look at it, guys. I mean, there's a lot more expensive things you can spend money on, and for the price of a flat, a good quality premium ammo here, you might be able to save that at least tenfold over the next year or so.
What I say to people is, if you shoot a silver pigeon, put the plastic one on it. You shoot a Krieg off, put the metal one on it.
Yeah, good way to do it.
That's how I see it, you know?
I will interject this, that we sell out of the right-hand metals like yesterday, all the time.
Okay.
The more expensive metal one is like by far more popular than the plastics.
Gotcha.
It's absolute. You would think it would be the opposite. It's not. And I've tried everything out there, and I'm telling you that if for my situation, this was the best thing I could find.
When we launched the product, what we did find immediately was everybody bought the plastic.
Okay.
That's the English mentality. And then 3 weeks later, all those plastic ones appeared on eBay, and we had a huge abundance of metal ones ordered. Serious. No, dead serious. Dead, 100% truthful. They put them on eBay and Facebook, and they bought a metal one. They put their toe in the water, liked it, upgraded, and sold the plastic one to somebody else.
Makes sense. Definitely makes
sense.
Well,
anytime you try something totally different than you've ever done, you get nervous about it, right? The day that I put mine on, in fact, I was standing at the make or break where I won that night, and I had a guy walk up to me, and I had my gun over my shoulder, and he tapped the end of my barrel. He said, I have one of those. I said, really? He goes, yeah, and it's never coming off my gun either. And it just, it, you know, look, I've got two awesome coaches I work with. I mean, I should have never questioned it anyway, but it just gave me that little bit of a bump in confidence. If somebody I don't even know walks up and tells me that, you know, it made me feel like
a lot of people don't understand how much detail went into that product, right? So we started off with an L-shaped rail like this, and my dad shot fantastic. He went to a fit-ass shoot, and it was a car crash. It just simply, he fell off the side. But he went from 85s to 89s at Sporting Clays, back down to nearly in the 40s to 50s at Fitas.
Now, why would that be?
And I was like, right, I got to get my head around this. So I took it to the, because as soon as he went gun down, his left eye could see over the L.
Okay.
So then I developed the hood on the top.
Okay.
So now when he's in the gun down position, the hood now shields it. So that was phase one. So we made the next one. And then we started like, we're there. We've got the finished product here. We're done. And then we went to a shoot called Honesbury. And I had two clients with me, my father and my friend Stamati. Both of those were shooting the rail. And again, their scores just went down. And I was like, look, this must be product based because they're both gone down. And what we realized, Honesbury was in a wood and the sunlight didn't come in to ignite the bead. The bead went dark. So I called my friend Frank Dirkscotter in Germany, who's his wife. She's won the European Championships at Fitas with the rail on. And I said to him, right, we've got a problem. The bead is amazingly bright with sunlight. I need one that's amazingly bright without sunlight. And he came back to me and he said, right, we can do it. We can inject the plastic and make it bright, but you're not going to like the price. And he gave me the price and I was like, it is what it is. And a lot of people think it's the rail that's expensive. One of the most expensive parts of that rail is that red dot.
Really?
Because we have it injected that it stays bright, whether the sun's on it or it's not.
Interesting.
I will attest to that.
And that's where that was. Then we went from the L shape with your rib, with your bead, to the L shape with a red bead, to the hood with a red bead, to the hood with the new bead. And that's where we're at now.
Nice. So definitely just had to do step by step to get it to where it is now. That's cool. That's very cool.
And is that new red bead out now, Ben?
Yeah, we never sold one without the red bead. I didn't put one to market. Look, I put my name on something and it gets ridiculed anyway. So if I'm going to launch something I'm going to sell, it's going to be right.
No, I mean the new injected red bead.
We never sold one that wasn't injected.
Okay.
They're all prototypes. Gotcha. Well, guys, I think we've covered quite a bit here tonight. Have I missed anything, or is there anything we need to tell people out there? Because obviously there's going to be a lot of turmoil over this. People are going to start scratching their head and thinking, well, maybe I do have an eye dominance problem. And
well, in my opinion, what you're going to have is what I fight here in the U.S. is you get the instructors or the coaches that just absolutely refuse to discuss looking at the barrel. They, you know, a lot of times I've had students that, you know, they come back from seeing particular instructors and they've got their beads knocked off their gun, you know, and they're just shooting a barrel. And, you know, look, in my opinion, in the US or anywhere in the world, I think if you shot a million rounds since you're 8 years old and you've had somebody stand behind you doing it correctly, I think you can get to a point where you subconsciously know where the barrel's at. I'm sure Ben does at times, but the way we teach, this is why I work with Ben, is because we don't have a problem talking about what the most important thing is, which is lead. And if the gun's not in the right spot, it ain't going to break. And I don't give a crap who you are and how good you are. You have to know where the gun's at. And yes, as we get better and better, maybe you can get to a subconscious state, but I'm pretty sure if you take Ben, David, Wendell, Anthony, 99% of us that shoot will never shoot the amount of targets that those people have shot. So we are always going to be behind the rail. And the deal is, you know, I watched it this weekend. There was a 85-yard bomb that was out at the Western Regional. And what was everybody talking about? I watched 25 people shoot it before Brandon shot it. And even he was talking about whether how much lead it took. And if you ain't knowing where the gun's at, you're not going to hit it. And that target took at least 15, 20 feet of lead. And that's no joke. It was big, especially when I shot it in the wind. If you have a dominance problem and you're looking at the other barrel that is sitting out there, you're shorting it no matter how hard you try. Okay. Especially if it's coming from left to right. So why not put something on your gun that can give you an advantage? I mean, we're porting barrels, we're getting aftermarket chokes, we're running this load or that load, or we see a big target and we put the 1 1/8 big dogs in there, you know, 1300 foot per second, and we get custom stocks and we weight the guns all over the place. If there's something like this that we get the glasses, right? If you can get something that actually can help you learn where the gun's at, you're just winning. You know, my only question is Ben, how long do you run it for? Do you just run it forever, or is it something that you use as a tool?
I've never had anybody take one off yet. You know, we're going to have one at Paris Olympics. We've got, you know, that's going to be a big deal for us. If the guy can medal in the skeet with that on it, you know, we'll be jumping up and down. But we've won world titles in trap. We've won world titles in sporting clays. We've won European titles in FITAS. We've got over 20 national titles around the world. The importer for Sweden is Hakan Dalby. He believes in the product. He's an Olympic silver medalist. In the Czech Republic is David Kostelecki. The guy's been a two-time Olympic gold medalist. You know, we're not endorsed by Joe Nobody that can shoot 60 out of 100 and try to tell you how to shoot. We're endorsed by champions that have actually test-fired the product and believed in the product, and they said it. You know, as I said, John's now the importer here. We went with John because he seemed legitimate and he uses the product. That was one of the big things this time, that we went with somebody that actually uses it. And the one thing I want to say to the viewers is I don't sell this product. I don't get paid by the business and I don't sell the product. You cannot buy this product from me. I don't force it onto clients. If you don't ask for it, I don't bring it up unless I think it's seriously going to help you. And if we're on a lesson and I bring it up, I'm going to gift it to you. And if it works, you pay me. If it doesn't work, I'll cut it off. I don't use my status as an instructor to sell this product at all.
Well, I had no less than half a dozen text messages, countless messages through social media asking me, what is this thing that you found that's helping with your eye dominance? I mean, and all I did was mention it on a podcast, and I got blown up by it. So I'm hoping that this solves this question, you know, this issue, and this gives people some good information on it. Aside from the website, John, Ben, Chad, whoever wants to jump in here, aside from the website, if people have even more questions about this, who can they reach out to? Where can they go to get more information?
I think what I'm going to do here, just to clear this up, is John's just placed an order for his next batch. I'm going to make Steve put 3 or 4 demonstrator kits in there. Now, what the demonstrator kit is a right-hand and a left-hand aluminum rail with some special tape that lasts about 100 shots before it falls off. You know, I'll probably get one of those to you, Jason, one of those to you, Chad, where these people can actually come and fire it. And if they don't like it, they take it off, hand it back and say, thank you very much, you know. Yeah. And if they do like it, they go to John's website and buy one.
There you go.
And my number's on the website. They can call me. I've spoken to I don't know how many customers that ended up buying it because I told them how to use it.
But I think it's important that we get some demonstrator kits out there where, you know, the guy that sits there and he thinks, I really want to try it, but 120 is a lot of money for it not to work. I'll stand behind the product where they can test one. If you don't want one, don't have one.
That's awesome.
And I think the other message here, and Chad, you and I have talked about this, and Ben and I have talked about it, it's not sticking on the gun and go. I mean, you got to get used to it. It's just like any other thing you've ever had to train with, you know, learning a new method, learning a new mount, anything. And one of the things I think
that's worse both ways. We have some people that takes a few months, and then we had a young kid went to the world ATA trap in England, over in Ireland, and he put it on the day before because he heard about it and went and got gold.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I mean, to well, be
you
fair,
the want to make or break too, buddy.
Well, you know, that's what I was just getting ready to say. I mean, the day that I put it on, I won the Super Sporting at the Blackjack Open, and then that night I won the make or break. But in the main, the next day on Sunday, it took a little bit of time. And Ben's like, look, you're 51 years old. You know, every time I want the gun out of the safe, every time you walk by it, let's pick it up, mount the thing 10 times. You need to get used to seeing that on the end of your gun. And you need to get used to shooting with it. So, and it's gotten better and better. I mean, you know, I'm blessed. I won the Florida Challenge in AA with it. So.
Boom.
Gotcha. Well, guys, I mean, again, I think we've covered an awful lot of territory here, and there's probably a lot of people out there that, you know, may resemble some of this stuff and may think that they have an eye dominance problem. So, you know, here's hoping that what we've given them is something they can research and hopefully try and hopefully fix problems and make them better shooters, right?
That's the goal.
That's the goal. Anything else anybody wants to chime in for we wrap this up?
Look, you guys, don't ever be afraid to talk to a coach about your eye dominance. And there are a ton of us out there that know what we're talking about. And if we don't, you know, I know enough about it that it still was something I wanted to talk to. You know, I talked to Anthony about it a bunch because he's coached so much, and I've talked to Ben about it. And, you know, you can't be afraid to talk about the stuff that people don't want to talk about, right? You know, and you can't just learn it. I mean, I guess like in Ben's words, if you want to do it without it, it's just going to take loads and loads and loads of shells. And it's probably still not going to be right, you know? So
the one thing that for me, the eye rail was prevention over cure.
Absolutely.
Fix it before you miss.
That's a good,
there you go.
That's a good way to look at
it. So yeah, it's helped a couple of my students that, I mean, you're just phenomenal with it. So, you know, some of them take it. I have a student that took it off and she's not as good as she was with it, but you know, she didn't like it on the front of her fancy, you know, $27,000 shotgun. So she took it off, even though it was the metal one. So that's fine. She'll either get it or she won't, you know, and that's okay. You know, everybody has a choice. I mean, to what you put on your gun, but don't think it doesn't work, because it does.
That's awesome. Good testimony there, Chad.
So to sum this up, we will have the link in the show description to the Eye Dominance Real website. Chad's link is always down in there. If you're in the United States, you want to talk to him about it. Of course, Ben, if you can't find Ben on social media, you're living under a rock. But, you know, reach out to us if you want. We can get you in contact with any of these people. John, Chad, Ben, love to help out any way we can.
And a quick thank you to you and Sean. You know, I've said it every time, but you know, you guys are trying to improve the sport. You know, anybody can record a podcast and try and big up themselves, but I think you guys do a great job of actually trying to help the people that listen, not just do it for your own benefit. So thank you again.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben. We appreciate you. John, thank you for coming on. Chad, good talking to you as always, bud. We got
thanks, questions. Thanks, Ben, for everything.
We got questions. Hey, real quick, Chad and Ben, we got questions for the coaches rolling in, so we're probably going to get a hold of both of you here in the near future.
Oh, this will be fun.
Yes. All right, guys. Thanks again. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Well, Jason, that was really informative. I mean, again, I don't think I have any eye dominance problems. It doesn't seem to be that I would. Maybe one of these days I'll get one and just mess around with it just to try it out and see if it makes any difference to me, but obviously it's working for you. Sounds like it's been working for other people. And that was a heck of a lot of good information from Ben, Chad, and John. So, you know, what do you think, man? You're definitely going to keep it on the gun, I assume.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, proof is in the pudding, as they say.
Right. Right.
I take what Malcolm Parker tells me to heart, and he came up to me second day. I had that thing on the gun. He's like, man, you're just pounding targets now. You're centering targets. And, you know, he asked me, he's like, what shells are you using? What chokes are you using? You know, and I said, same thing I always have been. I said, it's just this eye rail. I can see everything now the way I'm supposed to, you know. Yep. So yep. It's made a big difference. You know, credit to both Chad and Ben for figuring out what was going on. I mean, if it wasn't for them and their help, I'd still be the same basket case I always was before. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's just like you talk about the light bulb moment all the time, Sean. You talk about the light switch going off. And when that thing got on there, and I would say probably 200-300 rounds into it, it was like, I mean, I saw the benefits immediately, but it was like 200-300 rounds in, it was like that light bulb came on. It's like, now all the training, everything that Chad's been putting me through for the last 2.5 years is all starting to come to fruition. Yep. It worked in FeeTask, but in sporting, when the gun's up in the face, I was having this issue, you know? I love it. And it's going to stay on my gun, and you know, who knows? I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask Ben, he had told me privately, is his dad had the eye surgery and he's got great vision now, but the surgery made him 100% left eye dominant. So the eye rail stays on the gun, you know, and I want to have that surgery someday. I mean, I'd love to. I mean, I'm tired of, I hate wearing glasses, and you know, but unfortunately it's 10 grand and you know, I'm going to be away from shooting for a while when it happens. And then, you know, we'll see what happens when it does. When the vision is corrected, you know, that eye rail might have to stay on there.
Yeah. Well, and again, I've watched you over the past several years, and I saw the frustration. I saw the flinching, the missing, the bewildered look you sometimes had when you would miss sometimes just the simplest of shots. And right. It's just like, is your head in the game? Did you eat something? Or, you know, what's going on? And so this is definitely been a blessing. And obviously with all the listeners that are listening to this episode right now, you know, you probably should be consulted. I mean, unless all this stuff that Ben mentioned, you know, the symptoms, the signs, unless they are glaringly obvious, I would still probably ask questions of a coach to just have them look at you and make sure that's what it is.
Right.
Again, for $129 for the aluminum one, it's not a lot of money, but it's also not what I would call necessarily cheap. Although when you look at the tools and the accessories that we buy for this sport, you know, it's definitely on the lower end of a price point. So hopefully this will help people.
And I'm sorry, Sean, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but don't be a hypochondriac. What I mean by that is, how many times have you watched a commercial on TV? If you have this symptom, you take this pill and you know,
right.
Look, just because you miss some targets doesn't mean that you have an eye dominance problem, right? Don't go run, put this thing on the gun and then call us 6 months later and say, I'm not shooting any better. You know, go to Chad, go to Ben, go to John, reach out to one of these people and say, you know, here's the problem I'm having. They're probably going to want to see some pictures or videos of you shooting, and they'll make that determination and they'll tell you, yes, this is a good fit for you, or maybe you just have a training problem.
Right. And for those of you who are aware that you have an eye dominance issue and you're using other methods, like you're taping the lens closed or trying to hold your eye closed or whatever you're doing to try to fix that, obviously this would be something to try and, you know, hopefully would be successful to remedy that problem. It's just the people that might be unsure if they have a problem or not. That's why I want to make sure that they know, you know, before they jump on the bandwagon, that this isn't just a cure-all and it fixes you and you can go shoot 100 straight like Brandon Powell. That's not it. But the people that actually truly have eye dominance issues and struggle with keeping their eyes in check, this is probably a great tool for them and obviously will be a big benefit to them and hopefully their shooting.
Yeah, speaking of dominance, about Brandon Powell running 300 straight. He shot 100 straight in the Super Sporting or Prelim, I think it was, at Seminole Cup, and then ran 2 100 straights in the main.
Guy's a beast.
I mean, you know, and then Zach turns around and shoots 100 straight at the Prelim and the Western Regional. I mean, my goodness. This is, you know what? It's an awesome time right now in our sport. It's awesome to see this because these guys are taking that to that next level. You know, they're raising the bar just like Tiger Woods did in golf. And yep. It's awesome to see. I know 100 straights have been done before, but it seems a little bit more prevalent now. And we can get into targets and all that other crap, but I don't care if they're charity targets or the hardest targets you've ever seen. Anytime somebody runs 100 straight, it's impressive.
Right. And Jason, speaking of charity tournaments and stuff like that, what do we tell everybody every week, buddy?
Oh, you're flipping it again. Oh, I love it. Take someone new shooting. Take them to a tournament. We want to see you taking somebody new out. And when I say we want to see, that means when you take that new shooter out to a tournament for the first time or just out shooting for the very first time, take a picture, man. Tag us on social media. Put it up on our Dead Pair Public group page there on Facebook. We want to see it. We want to see that this is working and that you're following the Dead Pair Challenge. One new person a month. We want you to take one new person a month shooting. What does it benefit us? It benefits all of us. Let's grow the sport. Let's share in the love and how awesome this sport is. I think it's awesome. And we're going to have someone on here in a very short order. Oh, ooh, am I letting that out of the bag, Sean? We're going to have somebody on that's going to talk about the growth in this sport. Somebody way more educated than these two numbnuts. So, but the message is still clear. Take someone new shooting. Take them to a tournament. And don't forget the Dead Pair Challenge. That's once a month. Take someone new.
All right, and obviously we couldn't bring you all this great information without the support of our sponsors, the newest one being Taconic Distillery. Thank you guys for joining us and helping us out spread the message of sporting clays. Also, we can't be remiss. We need to thank Fiocchi USA, great shotgun shells. We love them. White Rhinos, Little Rhinos are some of Jason and I's personal favorites. Also, Elite Shotguns, if you need a gun, they've got pretty much everything. Kohler being their flagship model, but they carry a lot of stuff. Zoli, Beretta, Caesar Guarini, all kinds of guns. Also used guns, so check them out. Also, big thanks to Rhino Chokes if you need to get your gun tweaked a little bit. Chokes, barrel porting, gun fit, they do it all. Rhino Chokes is awesome, and the guys working there will help you out. Also, big thanks to RE Ranger. We love our React lenses, Jason, and I know that they're getting hopefully closer and closer to getting that prescription lens kit out for those Reacts, but we'll hopefully have something on this year with an update for that.
Yes.
And also, American-made Atlas Traps. We love us some Atlas Traps, don't you, Jason?
Oh, yeah. Give me a call if you want to. Hey, listen, if you're a club and you're anywhere between Florida and Ohio, and you want to demo an Atlas trap, get a hold of me. I'd love to help you out. Or if you're an individual that needs a trap or a five stand for your backyard, I can help out with that too.
Right. And keep those ears protected with OdoPro Technologies. Dr. Grace is one of the best audiologists in the country. She knows what she's doing as far as hunting and sporting clays goes. She'll help you out. And the girls there that are part of the team are also awesome. Also, let's not forget Don Grant keeping those mental vibes clear and very, very focused. Hopefully, Don can help you out if you're having any mental issues with the game. And last but not least, let's not forget Vero Beach and also Score Chaser. Couldn't get registered for the tournaments that we love to go shoot without Score Chaser. And if you're ever down in the Florida area, Vero Beach is a beautiful place to go shoot year-round.
Yes, and I think the Caribbean Cup is, by the time you're hearing this, I think the Caribbean Cup's now up on Score Chaser.
I believe so.
For 2025, yeah.
I believe so. We will be having some updated news about the Dead Pair Blast later this year, very, very soon, hopefully, as well.
Yes, absolutely. Sean, this has been a great episode. Lots of good information out there. Another way that there's another tool out there to help. So, you know, if you are having problems, you know who to get a hold of. In the meantime, Mr. Ali, until next week.
We can't wait to see you all back here on the Dead Pair Podcast.
We'll see you next time on the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair.
The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by Elite Shotguns and Vero Beach Clay Shooting and is fueled by Fiocchi USA. The Dead Pair theme song was written, arranged, and produced by Toby Tomplay. Special thanks to the following sponsors: Rhino, OdoPro, Don Grant, Atlas Trap Company, and RE Ranger.